Welcome back to Videorama, where we take your request for a topic and give you our recommendations. We receive a message from a woman who will... She has certain preferences. She's addicted to porn, you know. And she'd like to ease the transition to legit films.
I am.
Oh, and well, she's looking for recommendations for the movies that got the pornography stars. And I'm your host, Adrian.
Euphrigenia Doubtfire.
That's right.
Oh, dear. Oh, Captain, my Captain.
Who are you?
Well, I'm Donnie the Confused Weasel.
Weasel!
I'm here to tell you about why you shouldn't change your tire by the side of a busy highway.
My name is Linda. I had to take a muscle relaxer, so I'm all gorked out for this.
You're
and she didn't even fucking share. Why, Linda? You know, your muscle relaxers gave you such sterling taste in t-shirts.
Oh.
What's that lovely t-shirt you have?
Well, thank you so much for asking, Adrian.
Why don't you put them on the glass and let us all see?
Didn't we burn those with the body?
I'm glad that you asked, because I just won it in a bum fight against these three hipster douchebags that kept saying, like, oh, do you know who we are? We have a podcast. Podcasters, am I right? Fuck it, A.
those podcasters, what can you do?
I'm pretty sure they crawled out of a dumpster.
They must have after setting a fire in
there's
there.
There's bloodstains.
There are so many dead homeless people.
Switchblade serenade.
Why are we here, Adrian?
We're here because the kindly lady who's trying to kick porn. Well, I chose a selection directed by a pornography auteur from the 70s. This man is actually got a master's degree in filmmaking from UCLA.
Is it Max Velvet?
And no, nor is it Dino Velvet.
Oh, God.
But this is actually the guy who directed the first gay porno to have dialogue and a plot.
Yay!
Yeah. You may know, you porn fans out there may know him as Lancer Brooks. But on this movie, he's credited by his actual name, Tom DeSimone, which still sounds like a fake name, but it's cool.
DeSimon.
Tom
DeSimon.
This is the cinematic genius who directed the infamous movie Chatterbox about the woman with a talking and singing vagina.
I was going to ask.
Yeah. That was actually his transition from porn to mainstream filmmaking.
That's fantastic.
Oddly enough. Yeah, the movie that made Harry and Michael Medved shit their pants. I'm like, oh no, this is terrible. This is terrible. I need religion right away. I don't know what to do.
Didn't our dad used to love Michael Medved?
He didn't love him. He used to listen to him for a little bit.
I love your dad, but man, the Medveds. No, there's no excuse for them. They're both bastards. I feel so betrayed by Mel Gibson right now. It's like, oh, surprise, Medved. Fuck.
Oh, no.
But this is not Chatterbox. This is not Reform School Girls.
Why?
No, it turns out this one, because I wanted to do a slasher classic from the golden age of the American slasher movie. So this is early 1981 here. This is Hell Night. This is another vehicle for Linda Blair right here.
It launched her to fame.
It's post Roller Boogie, and it's pre her having posed nude. She actually
thought
that posing nude would sort of launch her out of having to do cheapo movies for kids, and she thought she'd get more adult roles, but instead she wound up in Savage Streets.
And she was in Repossessed. Donnie and I used to love that.
Actually wanted to get her to be in Exorcist 3, but instead she was doing Repossessed.
I think actually what really propelled her was being with Rick James, because he punched her and that repelled her. It just sent her off to the sky.
First woman on the moon was punched there.
Zip, zoom, wow.
God damn it.
But Linda Blair is not the only talent in this picture, by the way. We've got initially mustachioed Vince Van Patten, who is the son of Dick Van Patten and the nephew of Joyce Van Patten, and also, oddly enough,
apologies to the
and the half nephew of Timothy Van Patten of White Shadow, Class of 1984, and Master Ninja.
All better movies than this.
You guys don't make any sense to me at all. You guys came from another fucking planet. I swear to fuck.
We don't make sense like this movie didn't make sense.
Yes.
What do you need to make sense? It's a fucking horror movie. Like Argento said, it's like a dream put on cinema. It doesn't have to have logic, just so long as it has the right shit to make you feel something.
It made me feel something, that's for sure.
It made me feel a steaming remorse. Lump in your shorts.
Made me feel sad and sad and depressed for Linda Blair.
I love Hell Knight so much. Oh my god, this is right up there with The Initiation. This is right up there with Friday the 13th. Oh, you know, this is my shit right here. This is my shit right here.
This reminds me, I would like to make a public apology for using the M word for development.
Well, if you don't use it, they'll never know it was in this movie.
Yeah.
But I will point out that the cast of this movie, you know, and they're age appropriate to this, by the way, you know, they're all ass college kids. Of course they're going to use that word.
Well, I didn't know.
They're the worst, and they're the worst kind of college kids. They're frat kids. Right. So like them using that term, it makes total sense.
But I'm sorry. I wasn't aware that it was a racist term.
Now the M word haven't been used. Nowadays we say on the spectrum, which is a little misleading because everybody is in fact on the spectrum.
Everybody.
But some people are done different points. But no, they use the term, which is an unfavorable term for Mongolians. This was the term that the medical community was using. They finally dropped it in the mid-60s. But until then, that's what they before using the R word, it was the M word.
But I was a little upset because Carlo was surprised because he watched it with me, and
I'm so sorry, Carlo.
Oh, that's right. I shouldn't forget. He wanted me to pass on a message, but before I do that, I was the first person who ever used the phrase "gorked out." I said I was going to get gorked out on pain pills.
You know, that's also a medical term.
Well, then he finally saw this movie and he looked at me like, oh, it's like, no, I didn't come up with the term.
Yeah, it means a brain damaged patient.
We apologize for that.
His message.
What for? It's not a slur.
It's not a slur this time.
But to you.
That one's not a slur.
His message.
Oh, you come from Gorkistan, Donnie, and you don't appreciate that?
Do you want me to show you my Gorkistan tattoo on my chest again? It means not welcome.
Yeah, everybody puts them on the glass. That's how this works.
You see this? You know what this means? His message that he wanted me to pass on is, fuck you, Adrian.
That's fine.
This
fuck
is
you
a
guys
Carlo
do.
First.
Fuck all y'all.
I tried to get him to come on, but he won't.
You guys only like the slasher movies where an 8-year-old shows their penis at the end.
God damn it.
No taste. No taste, these two.
I can't get my husband into the video store. He stays in the back.
The corn kernel famously said, Adrian, I will not be made number two.
Speaking of number two, Donnie, hit it with that theme music. Amy? Amy, what happened? What did you do? Amy, this is serious. Damn it. Where is it, Amy? Where is my money?
Where's my movie? Where's it at?
Where's it at right now, even? What was she doing?
Who are you?
You just leave in your other pants and drive off. I see how you are. Hell Knight, which was released August 7th of 1981. Shooting was completed early that year. It cost roughly $1.4 million and brought in roughly $2.3 million.
That was the year of Melinda. So it didn't
necessarily set the world on fire. That was the year. You're ratting yourself out again. Yeah. It's going to be the month of the Linda before too long here, too.
It is. It's already the month of the Adrian.
It's the month of the Adrian. Yeah, never mind what year that was.
1852.
So I do not have a ranking for the opening weekend for Hell Knight, unfortunately, but I can tell you what else people were seeing when this was out and what some people were seeing instead.
Chatterbox?
Number one movie. Chatterbox, obviously. Number one movie was Raiders of the Lost Ark. Mm-hmm. Number two movie was a little movie called Empire Strikes Back. Mm-hmm. Number three was Bo Derek in Tarzan the Ape Man. Mm-hmm. The big Miles O'Keefe debut. Then you got Heavy Metal.
Mm-hmm.
And Stripes.
Mm-hmm.
Arthur. Superman 2.
Oh.
And De Palma's Blowout, which is pretty fucking good. Mm.
All better movies than this one.
Fuck you. So, the horse you rode in on right now, I swear to fuck. Yeah. Did you see Tarzan the Ape Man?
Yes.
How many hands did you have on the keyboard at the time?
I had enough to notice there was no gorking on the gork. I had
you gotta have brain damage killers.
You know what? I'm
killers.
A mechanic, and I don't tell people. We're like, me, Tarzan, no. Have no car.
There's a word for when,
I'm a mechanic.
When Linda Blair's in the room there in the costume with powers of Matthew Starr, there's a word for the conversation she's having. She's not just girl mechanic because she also helps the other sorority girls with their grades. She's the not like other girls girl. That's the term there.
You know, it was upsetting to me because I was thinking like free clothes, shoes, and the best bedroom in the place and a fucking car. Why didn't I join a university with a frat, like a sorority? Like shit.
See, no, instead you had to go to Loserville Evergreen with me. Aren't you happy?
Yeah. Hippie college.
Aren't you so fucking happy?
I got to hug a tree.
You know, we got hellaciously drunk without a fraternity. You don't need that shit, people.
That's true. We created the alternative.
Oh, but it forges relationships that you'll have for the rest of your life. It's like, yeah, you can't make friends without some kind of artificial organization.
Fuck fraternities. Fuck sororities. Fuck all
Oh, yeah, no, I did a lot of Greek life in college. You know, I'm an executive. I watch Entourage on purpose.
We had the alternative that was built on apathy. Omega Mugama.
That's the plot of Hell Knight.
And puking in front of the library building.
And that.
Yeah.
So what happens in Hell Knight?
So Hell Knight is apparently a thing where they make the pledges to sororities and fraternities do some shit to get in. It's you know, like it's like hazing shit. It's like, yeah, we're going to spank your bare buttocks or make you think that you're about to get hanged. A lot of movies from the late 70s and early 80s have this largely because of Animal House. Animal House was such a huge hit. So about half, better than half of the early 80s slasher things, in fact, well into the mid 80s, they're as much about Animal House as they are about Halloween and Friday the 13th.
A lot of butt stuff.
It was like, students are getting killed. Oh, but they're getting wild. Woo!
And sorority, was it Sorority House Massacre?
Yeah. Or
well,
Hell
don't
Train.
Forget House on Sorority Row. That's a really good one. I really like that one. A
lot of ass cheeks.
Black Christmas.
This is back when you could still sell an R-rated movie. You can't anymore because everybody's a fucking pussy. But back then, like it's like okay, well, we got to get the things that people go for in the movies here. There's going to be breastises, you know, at least two pair.
There were a bunch of pussies. Like they were too afraid to show anything.
It's directed by a gay porn auteur. I love it. All the things I want, none of the things I don't want.
At one point, like the guy, what was his name, Steven or whatever, says
the surfer who the lady was staring at his junk the whole time.
No, not that one.
The surfer's Van Patten.
The nerd with the who is dressed as a pirate.
Yeah.
Okay. And he says, he tells the girl that's acting as a coat checker at the sorority house or fraternity house, whatever it was. He tells her, you know who this is? This is the president of this the fraternity. You should show respect. And she goes, oh, I'm showing much more than my respect.
Well, and her brother was in that fraternity, too.
Ew.
That's what he had
said.
Well,
don't forget who the president of the fraternity was.
I've already forgotten all.
That was Kevin Brophy from Time Walker, a.k.a. Being from Another Planet, which was shown on Mystery Science Theater 3000. That's the one where the alien mummy is loose on campus and is trying to collect the gems that the kids have been passing around.
To put it back inside its triangular glowy thing.
Yeah, it's glowy triangular communication thing, because at the end of the movie, it's like, oh, wait, E.T.'s popular. Well, we can't have a killer alien. It's got to turn out to be a friendly alien. Just like the star crystals.
So it's in the shape of a triangle. Would you say it's in the shape of a wedge?
Where the fuck are you going?
Astral cheese projection.
You know, like a vagina.
Oh,
it's pronounced vagina.
Talk about the cheese wedge.
Oh God. Anyway, four pledges have got to be locked inside of this mansion where there was this horrific family massacre, because there were some old timey millionaires there and all their kids were like mutants. You know, they were all differently abled in the brain or physically, or, you know, something was going on with
them. Gorked out.
And he lived with that for a while. And yeah, gorked, brain dead. Yeah. And so the millionaire is like, well, this has been a horrible waste of time. Fuck all this. And so he murdered the whole family and hanged himself.
As you do.
And then it turned out that there were corpses missing. And so, you know, now people dare each other to touch the fence, you know, dare each other to spend the night there. And they're spending the night and they're getting to know one another. And Van Patten's doing that lady with the accent who likes Quaaludes. And Linda Blair is having not sex with the powers of Matthew Starr guy.
Because Lou Gossett Jr. isn't there to instruct him.
And they start hearing eerie noises, but they figure out right away that Kevin Brophy is fucking with them because it's part of their initiation. So they put up speakers and there's holographic projections of like walking corpses with nooses around their necks and things. And while they're getting fucked with, they've got no reason to realize that the real killers living in the house have started killing off Kevin Brophy and friends.
Kevin
and, like,
Brophy
leaving
and
severed
friends.
Heads in their beds. And so, yeah, no, it turns out, yeah, the legend was real, and there are differently abled people who have been living in the tunnels beneath the house, like surviving on murder possibly for decades here, and they want to murder all of them. And they've been locked in, and only the super fit future tennis player, former surfer, Vince Van Patten, is able to climb over the gate and tries to go out to get
without
help while they struggle.
Nerds.
Yeah. Without hurting his nards. Yeah, but while hurting his shirt.
Yeah, okay, why did he take his boots off in the first place? And then second of all, why did...
To make it easier to climb. We got monkey feet.
Okay.
Why didn't they give him his shoes back?
No, why?
Because fuck
no,
him.
No, he gave him the boots back, but he threw them over the gate when there's plenty of space underneath where he could have just been like, here you go.
Why is this bothering you?
Well, I think it should bother
more. It's a terrible
movie. When you go to a police station and they don't believe you, and you're allowed to leave a police station with weapons that were confiscated from possibly another crime.
Yeah,
see, I believe that. I believe that.
I'm glad that the police leave the evidence room unlocked.
They're idiots. They're idiot cops.
Yeah,
cops are supposed to be idiots in a horror film, because if the cops could help you, it would just end with a monster getting arrested in every movie.
Worst PD ever.
They are the worst PD ever. It's great. He slips out the window and goes back with a rifle.
It is during a time when, as we learned with Chud 2, two kids from high school could walk into the back entrance of the Pentagon into a secret room and wheel out a corpse. So, you know. But still, I don't like
Chud
it.
Chud 2, Bud the Chud, thank you.
I don't like it.
And it's also the worst sequel ever made.
But back to this film. The guy, the surfer, is the only person who could have actually just one and done this whole thing. He was smart. He got out. He could have said, you know what? Fuck y'all. He could have done a lot of other things, but he came back and he tried shot to be that thing.
Yeah,
and
he
decided not to shoot it in the fucking head because he figured, well, one and done, I'm good. And then he dies for what he did.
Because there's another.
No, he dies because the other one got him. Yeah, there's two.
Yeah, there are two Chuds.
Yeah, so, which is another thing I liked about this movie. It's like,
with
yeah.
this movie. Yeah,
Daniel Stern demands respect.
Well, I agree that Chud is a classic. Fuck you both. I fucking loved it. It had all the things I fucking love. And my name's Linda and I fucking loved it.
I know you do.
What a little twat. Yeah. Why didn't we leave him behind, Donnie?
Because he gorked his way into our hearts somehow.
The answer is his behind is his best part. Like, we could have just left the front of him.
He's a hard dog. And then he got killed by monsters.
Don't mind me as I eat pirate's booty.
Nobody would until you draw attention to it. So, yeah, this movie.
Yeah, but you guys are talking about logic, which has nothing to do with it. This movie has an amazing aesthetic. They got this wonderful gothic look to it. They got all these candles and shit. They got them in the period costumes. You know, you got that beautiful fucking musical store. No, production value and choices are two different things.
And there's so much
light.
It's
possible for a movie to look expensive without looking good.
And the underground tunnels, they're so well lit.
Yes.
So we can fucking see it's a movie. You have to have lighting. In a 1981, production lighting was still very much a thing. It's intelligently informed production lighting.
I do have to
It doesn't look 100% real, but it like reflects aspects of reality. It's like a painting.
I have to give it film points because they moved along things so wonderfully, almost Kubrickian, and how they went from the party to a horn sounding the charge of the cars that women were sitting on the glass of toward the house.
Yeah.
And then dramatically shooting the lock off of the gate to the house.
Yeah, and the close-up of Linda Blair wincing, yeah.
Yes, yes, and somehow not ricocheting and shooting himself, but again, won't apply logic.
Movie
won't
gun.
Won't apply it at all. It's movie gun. Does what it's supposed to do.
It's a great use of time. It kicks things right off. You get a scream, you get a shout of all
Is
the fire
it,
and the
though?
Kids partying. I think so. Yeah.
It's called We Were Given Money, Let's Make This Movie, and Let's Get Out of Here as Quick as We Can.
No, I think we've seen the slasher movies that were made like that. I honestly don't think this is one of them.
Days.
I think there was too much care. Yeah, it was made. It's a low budget movie. It was made on a tight production schedule.
Yeah.
But if you watch a lot of the movies that rolled in the early 80s that really, really wanted to be the next Friday the 13th, a lot of them were made by people who had no understanding of why Friday the 13th was a success. And so they would miss the boat by a broad margin on in many different aspects. And a lot of them, for some reason, they'll have like a similar setup, right? Like it'll be like 80% there. You know, you get the killer, you get the people in an isolated place. They're sexing on each other, but for some reason they decide like, oh well, that other movie used hot young people in shorts, but I'm gonna use this this freaking accountant with a mustache who's 45. It's like. But I thought you were trying to sell this to teenagers. They're not going to identify with Mustache Man right there. It's like, yeah, no Mustache Man and Mustache Wife. They go to Mustache Woods and get killed by Mustache Killer.
I did like the chick for bringing in, was it cocaine, Quaaludes, and radio?
Yeah. Like the vaguely British or Aussie chick, yeah.
Very tiny, tiny radio.
Between her boobies.
Yeah, well, she's got to stay amused because, you know, she you know.
That's why they didn't go into banging, because she wanted to hear about surfing and talk to him first, even though she was coaxing him to the bed.
And keep calling him Wes.
Yes.
Yeah.
He could never get his name right.
But, you know, that's it. There's fleshing out four characters instead of just depicting acres of flesh.
I do love the part with...
with her in the mirror?
Yes.
Isn't that great?
They're trying to scare her.
Yeah, except she's stoned, and so they do the thing where it's a double mirror, so they're looking from the other side with a monster mask, and she's like, "Oh, these Quaaludes are murdering my skin," and I'm like,
"Oh, that's good."
I also love the fact that we don't find her alive later.
Yeah, I was thinking, because there's a scene where like one of the Gorks come in covered with like a rug or blanket or some shit.
It was a blanket.
Yeah. I was thinking that it would have been a great time for them to put her in the blanket and have
them accidentally murder her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, we didn't get that there. It was just a Gork for some reason in a blanket.
There was a slasher movie, a shot on VHS slasher movie that Riff Trax covered where that's a thing where she accidentally just straight up stabs her friend all the way dies. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah. A couple movies do that. Like,
whoopsie.
What was it? The Never Talk to Strangers or whatever that was. The Liv Tyler movie. Come on.
Oh, Tyler movie.
I'm on muscle relaxers.
The only thing I can think of right now is Silent Fall.
I'm just thinking.
Wait, the Rebecca De Mornay thing?
Sunlight Down was such a better movie.
Well, the Tron of Dreaded Sundown is good, but I like this one. It's atmospheric.
I know you.
No. Any movie where you find a pit full of corpses sat around a dinner table and they're all covered in cobwebs and rats, I'm so there.
No, it's just The Strangers that I was thinking of.
I fucking love The Strangers.
That was a good movie. That was a good movie.
I bought that one on purpose. Yeah, I was really pleasantly. I never saw the sequel, but the most amazing thing about The Strangers is that they were able to pull it off with that cast. Like, I'd seen Scott Speedman in a couple things before. I'm like, Scott Speedman, fuck that guy.
It has Glenn Howerton.
Like, who?
Glenn Howerton from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia before he was. Before there was It's Always Sunny. It was good.
Before they were famous. Mm.
But yeah, good stuff. But this movie.
Yeah, you don't like it. Okay. I get it.
Yeah.
It's fucking beautiful. I love it.
No, it's not.
No, it really is.
It is not beautiful.
It is a gorgeous, gorgeous looking movie. It has a wonderful, lush score. I think they made great use of real locations. I think they made great use of those tunnels. And again, great fucking corpses. I fucking love those corpses.
That's nice to know where your standards are.
I'm just saying, and a lot of these, it's just like, it's fresh, still pretty corpses that they find. Like, it's the chick and her tits still look great, and she's covered with bright red blood when they find her, you know, like in the quick montage where the oblivious chick finds all the corpses right before she has to have the final showdown, and she just realized. Like, that's the standard thing. And this one's like, no, they've ripened for quite a while. They've been on that death vine. It's kind of like the end of the original Puppet Master.
Yeah.
Except more gothic and awesome.
And also better, yes.
All those awesome out of focus candles. Oh, yeah. Jesus. This is
know where your aesthetic love lies.
It's a visual poem to me. I love it so much.
I'm glad you do.
And I love the fact that Vince comes back and gets immediately killed.
Well, this time Linda doesn't know things, but I know Adrian knows things about this movie.
Yeah, we went over a lot of what I know about the movie. Mr. Brophy actually got his start in a TV series where he played a boy raised by wolves, which, looking at him, you can kind of believe. Like, oh yeah, no, he's kind of got a fucked up forehead. That must be why they cast him for that, right? You know, totally fucked up forehead. The composer was a guy named Dan Wyman, no relation to Bill, who was actually a music supervisor on Halloween. He was the orchestrator. And he also did synthesizer playing on Paternity. He did the music to Graydon Clark's Without Warning and The Return, which are both pretty decent. Well, actually, I never saw The Return, but Without Warning is like a low-budget Predator before Predator, except instead of being set in like the South American jungle, it's just set in California. But on this one, the Powers of Matthew star guy, that's a guy named Peter Barton, who did not do a lot of movies. There was a myth going around that he'd actually injured himself when you see him limping, but in fact, he claims he just put a rock in his shoe, you know, so he's like going method on it.
To remind himself that he has to be limping.
Yeah. And he was also in Friday the 13th, the final chapter. He played Doug. I don't remember which one was Doug, but I bet he got killed.
I remember the show. The show was good.
The show of Friday the 13th?
Yeah.
I never saw it.
Was that it, Donnie? Oh. And they had like the Amish quilt was part of it, or was it
yeah
was it like another Tales from the Dark Side?
No, yes, but it had nothing to do with Friday the 13th.
Well, yeah, that's what I figured. They just used a title. They marketed
it that way to get people to watch it. And then people realized, oh, God, it's just an old man grooming two teenagers to do things with him while collecting artifacts for his fucked up thing.
He's grooming the kids so they're going to a pageant? I'm sure that'll just be lovely. I hope before they got to the pageant, they gave each of them a Werther's and told them a story.
Yeah, it was Friday the 13th, the series.
Yeah.
Starring you licensed John the name to a... Yeah. And Chris Wiggins. It had Chris Wiggins.
Eh, Wiggins.
But yeah, it had nothing to do with the actual movie.
Yeah.
Or this movie.
Or this, sorry.
Or Lancer Brooks's porno.
I just can't help but think of all the things that I'd rather be watching.
Oh, my fucking God. Well, when we finish recording on this one, you're free to go. How about that?
Hot damn.
I thought for sure I wasn't going to get to rewatch it when Amazon switched it to pay, but then I just found it on Tubi. So, Easy Street.
I guess so.
And it's on Shudder.
Easy Street. So, Donnie, speaking to people hating this, I bet you got a song to play us.
I do.
Dicks.
So... I have two dissertations that felt.
Oh, really I bet captured. You did.
Let me settle in.
There were a lot, and I'm not even exaggerating. There were paragraphs people wrote on their hatred for this film, and they're
apparently no the only one who doesn't hate lack this.
Lack of taste.
I would
because they didn't understand this film.
Yes.
The cover says "Hell Night, Pray for Day" as the tagline. I was praying for this movie to end. That's how boring it was. This was one of the recommended films in Fangoria's 101 horror movies you never have seen book. Most of the ones I've seen so far have been good, but this one stunk. The plot, starring Linda Blair. This is one of the things that attracted me to the movie. Because we all know Linda from the great horror film The Exorcist. So I figure she would be good in this one, too. To my surprise, far from it.
Fuck me. Fuck me.
They've never seen another Linda Blair movie, apparently.
They never watched The Exorcist 2, The Heretic.
Or Airport 75 or Savage Streets.
A madman butchered his family in their mansion before killing himself. Legend has it. Only one child survived the slaughter and remains hidden in the house as a deformed monster. Halloween night, a group of fraternity and sorority pledges must spend the night in the most spend the night in Garth Manor, not Gork, but Garth Manor, on the anniversary of the killings. This film was very slow moving. The acting was terrible. Mostly a bunch of unknowns except Linda Blair, and it wasn't at all scary. This was a bad horror film. I wouldn't recommend it. You might not even be able to sit through it without falling asleep or turning off the TV. That is one dissertation. The shorter dissertation.
Thank you, Fangoria. Thank you.
Watching this movie will give you these thoughts as it progresses. When will it end? And is this over yet? It's bad enough that the flick has no nudity, and an 80s slasher flick without nudity? Are you kidding?
Are you kidding?
I mean tits or GTFO, people.
But it's not even scary. In fact, it's slow moving and boring. Most of this movie is scenes of people walking very slowly, very tediously, and by the time they get to where they're going, you've lost interest. This movie broke the cardinal rule of haunted house movies. A member never escapes, goes for help, then comes back. Well, this guy climbs the fence and goes to the police station. The cops think he's a drunk college kid, and send him on his way. Before leaving the police station, he happens to come across a room and opens it, leading to a room full of weapons and ammo.
I don't think he even opened it. I think it was slightly
open. No, it was already open. It was meant to be. It was fucking great.
He takes a pump action 12 gauge and goes back to help his two surviving friends.
After doing a carjacking.
Yeah.
He ends up getting killed. Yeah, then Linda awesome. And her boyfriend are hiding in a bedroom armed with a pitchfork. The monster comes in through a trap door while being covered with a throw rug and gets stabbed with the pitchfork. He escapes through the floor and is on the run. The boyfriend decides to go after him and get him. Still armed with the pitchfork, they take a long, slow walk through the basement caves.
That's what happens, yeah.
After walking what seems forever, they finally see the crazed fiend and run like scared rabbits.
Rabbits.
So what the hell did you go down there for?
Because they saw him uncovered for the first time and he's fucked up looking.
This flick is terrible, makes no sense, has no point, and is a bore through and through. Pass this up at all cost. Even if you see it in a pawn shop for a dollar, pass.
Sounds wow. like somebody's and a sissy.
My last review for you tonight. Mm-hmm. If given the choice between watching Hell Knight and a full frontal lobotomy, full I would frontal. Have to ask you to explain Linda. What's the difference between the two, because I don't know. That was a review that I left on Shudder.
What is a full frontal lobotomy?
You left that one your very own self.
Yes, yes, I did. Adrian.
You want to get a dick lobotomy?
I signed it. You know, again, man. If a choice between that and this movie, I couldn't tell you which would be worse.
A dick lobotomy.
If you leave me now, you'd take away the biggest part of me. My dick!
Ooh, Tony, yeah. Please don't go.
Oh my God!
So there we go. And that's what we have.
I want to say, Linda, you know, support and solidarity, but no, I can't support Linda on this path. Hashtag not all Lindas.
Yeah. This club says one Linda.
I stand by
plural.
Linda. I stand by
I
Linda
stood
Blair
by
all the way.
Linda Blair when she got even a plunger jammed up her cooter what? In a female prison film.
What? Yeah, Born Innocent.
Oh.
Yeah, Born Innocent. It's like the most famous terrible scene that happened. She gets gang raped in a shower.
And it's a TV
a
movie.
Yeah.
They figure like, this 13-year-old will do anything. Let's put stuff in her in our movie. Oh, it's like what happened to Jodie Foster.
Like I was okay.
Taxi Driver
with a
was probably the tamest
my legs
thing she
and
was
a crucifix.
In yeah, you know, oh, but yeah. The thing is like this is only like 7-8 years later, so that she's actually age appropriate to this role still. It's not weird or embarrassing like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'd still say it's embarrassing.
It is highly embarrassing.
You guys put a threshold for embarrassment in different places.
She made me cringe when she cursed because it just seemed such a forced thing where they had to make her say the F word. And I've never had that happen.
Well,
it's true, though. It did for me, too, because they're making her to be this, like, sweet
girl. I'm an adult.
Yeah, she's a sweet girl next door. And she's a mechanic. But
she's a smart and tomboyish girl, and she doesn't have Mercedes McCambridge eating raw eggs to dump her this time.
So
this you two want to doctor the script up?
Do we?
Yeah. Or let me Counting Crows it.
They let me down so hard when they did the stupid fucking Shrek song, those fucking bastards.
Shrek is a beautiful film.
Yeah, it is. It's even more beautiful yeah. porn.
Hey, now yeah, you're an all-star. So get your game on.
In that movie.
I'll go first. A movie already did it better, and that's The People Under the Stairs.
Yes.
There.
Donnie, you wait. Linda, you can't like The People Under the Stairs. Those kids didn't even show their tits. How can you have a horror movie without yeah. tits?
Those people ate them.
It was fantastic.
Them having yes. their dial. Did you fucking love it?
No, but I liked it.
No.
Yeah, wow. We even saw that in the theaters.
Wow. That was awesome. That's a low Linda rating. It's below fucking loved it. Oh, man.
I know.
Damn.
It has well, so much more weight.
If I were going to do a script doctors with something that I fucking love every time, yeah. it would probably, like, every cocaine? Single one would involve Idris Elba, shirtless Idris Elba, okay. and naked Tom Hiddleston oiling each other up and then wrestling.
And the Goots is there, too, for no reason.
Yeah, he's just there going, ha ha.
I get it.
Yeah. Welcome to my world.
And it gets racist when he keeps referring to Idris Elba as Hightower.
God damn it.
I ruined it.
What's that you're saying, mate?
The Goots could just play me watching. Salivating. Yes.
Oh, I thought kind you meant like the remake. I thought you were like clearing a space for him right there.
Like,
yeah.
like the TV remake they did of Dream On, where they gave his personality different people because that other show did a similar thing.
They did.
Is that different from the Boyfriend
On?
School?
It's like, yeah, they tried putting Dream on TV, and instead of using the old TV clips, they had like a smaller version of him talking to himself, like making jokes and shit.
Martin Tupper.
So it's like every time he just stared off, it would clip suddenly to like a small version of him, like his conscience making jokes and quips, because there was some show at the time that came out where they gave like personalities, faces and shit.
Oh, you're like thinking Howard's head.
Herman's head.
Yeah, yeah.
Or
yeah.
Herman's, yeah, that's
which,
it.
Which existed for a whole season, and most people only remember because The Simpsons referenced it.
Well, yes. Because the voice of Lisa was on it. What's her face?
Oh, yeah. That explains some shit. Oh, collusion!
If I tried script doctoring this, it took a long time to care to make a script doctor for this.
You don't have to care to make a script doctor thing. Look at most sequels. Do.
Because it takes effort to come up with this shit.
All right. Or give me the fruits of your labor that I made you do that you had to work hard for.
I decided I couldn't do it as a movie, but I would do it as a reality show. And it's Marty finds out that Gork was still alive, even though he was impaled on the gate by her car, which is another fun scene altogether in the movie. That
I
was
fucking
just
love that
fuck.
Ending.
I mean, if you look, the actor's leg twitches when they...
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's not too
but,
tough.
But he doesn't get back up.
Them, Gork and Marty make amends, and they G&M. Decide to open a custom car and detail shop.
Oh, Jesus.
So each week, Gork and Marty, along with their ever-changing, always new hiring employees, work to complete custom car orders for a variety of celebrity and local folks. Gork tries not to kill people, but spoilers... He does.
Oopsie.
And they have to keep hiring more people. Him and Marty fight constantly about the repairs, the cost, the time. But somehow at the end of each show, they always complete the car on time. And it's going to be on Sundays at 7 p.m. And it's called Hell's Garage. That's what I came up with.
Can you make it Gork My Ride?
Only on the History Channel.
Our Gork Pits.
Gork Garth.
Get your dick out of that tailpipe, everybody.
Oh, what about you, Adrian?
Okay, so mine's Dawn of the Hell, because it's a sequel. And I would be employing director Joseph Ellison of Don't Go in the House. And this one, it's a whole year later. And it really is a whole year later. Another gaggle of kids are daring each other to go in the house because it's even more infamous now. And Linda Blair really did dispatch all the killers, but that's not going to stop them returning from the fucking grave. That chick who played Angel in the first Angel movie is going to be there, and Jennifer Beals, maybe Dirk Benedict.
No.
And get some weird misplaced D. Barton music, and for somehow cinematography by Gordon Willis. So in this case, zombified frickin' dust covered corpses.
You just get it directed by Gordon Stewart.
What did Gordon Stewart? You mean Stewart Gordon?
Yeah, that one.
Okay.
I'm a muscle relaxer.
You have an awareness of this whole circle of like shows and shit that I've never seen. So for all I know, there's a Gordon Stewart out there.
I'm good enough. I'm smart enough. And God damn it. You
specialize someplace. We'll give you that much.
Yeah.
But no, I wasn't thinking of a Castle Freak having some lady touch his dick and breaking off his fingers. No, I wasn't thinking of that.
That
this
also
time.
Had a nipple torn off. Man ate a woman's breast.
That's true.
Well, why not? They're just hanging out there. What do they expect?
Better than this Gorkins. So much better.
Did you guys see New York Ripper? By Lucio Fulci.
Yes.
Did you see the part where he drags the razor blade across the chick's eye and nipple?
Yeah, and that also, they did a similar thing, too, in Demons when a razor was thrown over a nipple when they're scraping off the cocaine.
The cocaine scene.
Part's actually hard for me to watch.
Then you really need to see, I think it was Itchy the Killer, because they actually use a samurai sword to cut off a woman's nipples at one point.
Why?
It's actually really funny.
Well, in Itchy the Killer, the hardest part is the guy deafening himself by sticking needles in his ears. Like, good God.
If you want a really good date night movie for you and Carlo, watch Inside.
Also Mickey right there? What's Inside?
No, it's French.
Oh, okay.
And it's a movie that if you want to make sure that you're not going to have sex and also never have children, you would watch this film.
So it's a Gaspar Noé movie?
No.
There's cinema from all over the world that'll disturb the shit out of you, everybody.
Yes. Speaking of,
I recommend the book Mondo Macabro.
Well, like, okay. Razors across the eyeball always make me think of Un Chien Andalou.
Yeah, of course, because that's what this freaking silent movie with eyeball slashing by Buñuel.
Yeah.
And Fulci's career reflects Buñuel quite a bit, actually. But a lot of people like to write him off and pretend that comparison is just imaginary and like, no, he's just gross. It's gross. I don't like when things are gross, you guys. Ew. That zombie had worms in its eyeball. Ew. I have to go now.
So, speaking of this and wonderful things to discuss in films, because everyone knows we are famous for discussing the actual topic we are talking about, we have a new segment, and this is going to be Film Discussion Corner. And we are going to kick this off with torturing poor beloved Adrian.
Mm-hmm.
And it may turn into a scene from the movie Scanners for all we know, but it'll be fun to watch regardless, because I am going to have to read from Roger Ebert's review of this film.
Roger Ebert, the foremost film scholar in the history of ever.
Who likes crisp lettuce.
Crisp lettuce and speed 2 cruise control.
It's got to be about all the crunch. You got the lettuce, you got the bacon, you got the burger.
Wonderfully crisp.
Yes. It was the legendary Chicago film exhibitor Oscar Brotman who gave me one of my most useful lessons in the art of film watching. In 99 films out of 100, Brotman told me, if nothing has happened by the end of the first reel, nothing is going to happen. This rule, he said, has saved him countless hours over the years because he had walked out of movies after the first uneventful reel. I seem to remember arguing with him. There are some films, I said, in which nothing happens in the first reel because the director is trying to set up a universe of ennui and uneventfulness. Take a movie like Michelangelo Antonioni's L'Avventura, for example, and Brotman responded, it closed in a week.
Laverne and Shirley?
An Oscar. It was voted on the top 10 greatest films of all time. It's like, well, they must have all seen it in the first week. So...
Well, yeah, Antonioni's not Boffo Box Office, but, you know, there's a reason he exists.
So I guess my question is to start this off with is how true does the theory, if nothing happens by the first reel, nothing will, does that really apply to something like horror films? Because generally in a good horror film, a lot happens by then. You've established your characters, you've established the setup for the story. You've gone off the deep end on this to getting the horror established. You've had at least one kill, possibly. In most cases, you do, to get the ball rolling. But in, say, an instance of this film, you had a lot of characters talking and talking. Mm-hmm. I know you'd say developed character, but the only thing I think we really got developed as far as character goes is what comes back later when Linda Blair is talking about being a mechanic. Because then she actually does have to have her mechanic's moment of working on the car to get it to start.
Yeah, they set
and
that
then
up.
Run over the Gork. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When I was watching it with Carlo, I was like, but she's a mechanic.
She's a brainy mechanic. She's not just a gearhead. Mm-hmm. Not like other girls. Hashtag.
Not all Lindas.
Well, I think this all depends on how you define nothing. Because there are many ways to open a film very energetically without there actually being incident per se.
I can, if it helps you, I would define it as nothing eventful. Maybe nothing like even horror-wise happens. Nothing shocking or different. So just talking.
Well, okay, so Halloween, Friday the 13th, yeah, you get a killing right off the bat. Introductory killing, Michael Myers is introduced, you know, as a five-year-old who murdered his sister. And Friday the 13th, you get set at murder, everybody's around the campfire, kids go off to get have sex and get killed, right? And that is a typical slasher kickoff right there. It's like this is a murder to show you that there's going to be more murder. Mm-hmm. Whereas this thing, it introduces very energetic, boisterous teens on or post-teens, you know, 20-something maybe, you know, on the night where they're going to be up to no good. And you get all the shit, but what you don't get incident set up. What you get is you get characters introduced. You get your horror set up because you hear about the family and the hangings and the shootings and all that stuff. But mostly what you get is the important instead of opening with a killing, they open on a scream and then a shot of a bunch of teens in fire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of like Jaws started out with a bonfire on the beach and and hippies and partying.
Yeah. Right. Right. Except they're all sedate. Like, man, Michael, row your boat ashore. Right. I know, man. Seasons in the sun. Puff nothing's ever going to go wrong, man. I know. I'm like gonna... most of all, if I go swimming drunk, nothing will go wrong. I know.
We're
like when you leave your dog in a hot car.
Comment. About horror movie setup later, but for now we're focusing on this.
Right.
Well, I have to say, like, I think I'm pretty good at suspending my disbelief when I am enjoying the movie. And
oftentimes you are for your kind of movies anyway.
Well, yeah. I mean, if I'm enjoying the acting, the story, and you know, if it's entertaining me, then I'm willing to suspend my disbelief. But with this one, they were saying, I go, okay, so they have the whole house set up to, for their purpose, to scare the shit out of them.
Yeah.
So why didn't the Gorks get them then?
When they were setting it up?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe they were Gorkins?
Have you considered that maybe they set it up during the day?
Well, even
you
so,
notice that only both, active at night.
Both the Gorks have been living in caves. You notice that they have no pigmentation. They're really fucked up skin looking. They could just keep to the dark.
Oh, we're my son. That's all I can. So I can.
But I mean, like in the inside the house. They could walk around without hitting any sunlight. Like,
well,
that.
Here's another thing too. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
But you could have that, but that'd be set up to a longer movie, you know, or a movie that's structured differently, because the way it's set up now, basically the whole thing takes place in the house.
I think I would have preferred it if, like, they had gone in for the mirror gag and saw somebody from their fraternity dead. Like, if they were like, where's Steven?
I mean, there have been some like that. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it would have been easier. I would have been like, oh, okay, I get it.
Yeah.
But they didn't even have that. It's just the quirks waited.
But you're talking about like generally for a movie to be a good movie, like I'll agree with you right off the bat. Like, yeah, it has to be more about the storytelling, you know, which in general is informed by some kind of logic. Hell Night, I view as a very successful genre exercise. So it's not so much about a story. It's the kind of thing that only works as a film. And so it is a technical and artistic exercise. It's not about that side of the brain. Like, there could be a setup where it's like, oh, Hell Knight's coming, and we'd introduce Linda Blair earlier, and we would show her doing the things like working on the car and all that, so less of it be worked out in dialogue. And you get people disappearing, you know, as they're getting the thing set up. And then later, and under that setup, it might still work as a movie, but you'd only be in the mansion for a half hour. And
I think that's my problem, is that I'm more of a story-driven person,
generally you should be. But only most horror movies don't work from the story aspect, unfortunately.
No, but some kind of can nail it. I'm not. This is like an observation. I think, is it possible that part of the reason why you enjoy this so much is because this kind of appealed to me when I was watching it, and like the dialogue, how they interacted, how they all spoke.
Mm-hmm.
Is it more because it fit an aesthetic you like, where it's like, this felt like a 50s style horror film, where it's more about atmosphere, people talking, getting story out there, and then things happen, but it's not necessarily like the gore's centerfold in this. It's like, well, not like all the other horror films had been.
I mean, in a lot of aspects, it's not as contemporary, but it's not necessarily just like another era of filmmaking, but another era of horror in general, since the focus is on a strong gothic aesthetic, which is why I think it's important that it mostly be set at night and in the mansion, because that way you get less of the modern to intrude on it. You very rarely see a character outside of the period clothing, right? And most of it's by the candlelight and all that.
Yeah.
And so like I'm a big fan of gothic fiction, like all the way back to like the late 1700s gothic fiction right here. And so like if this does hark back to another type of filmmaking, it's like Mario Bava filmmaking. It's like Black Sabbath and stuff like that, you know, or Kill Baby Kill. It's like the whole thing has a dreamy quality to it, like a lot of unreality to it, you know, cuz the horror blends outside of reality. And it's very strongly aesthetic. Colors are more important. That's where this resonates with me. But the first time I saw it, honestly, it was less about that and more about the fact that there were certain slasher movie cliches, and I've seen a ton of them. There were certain slasher movie cliches. There were certain cheats that this thing did not go in for that I appreciated. And I felt like it ended at the right time. I felt like the chases went on for the ring.
It abruptly ends.
Because at that point in the movie, when she's outside, a lot of movies would have continued it. A lot of movies, like that thing would have pulled itself right off the gate, and it would have just kept going, and God knows where it would have gone from there.
I do appreciate that, and the fact that it doesn't have any jump scares. Cheap jump scares.
There was some cheapness that was not indulged in here.
Yeah.
And especially if you've watched a lot of horror movies from like after the mid 80s and into the 90s, like there's just a lot of cheating and a lot of bullshit that goes into those, which is why I focus on the early 80s, late 70s slashers.
So it's like this isn't funny, Bobby. Come on, Bobby. Come out. And then, and then the cat jumps out from nowhere. Mr. Whiskers.
Well, it's like this was still basically near the infancy of horror films, too, because Halloween was one of the first ones to actually not only colorize it, but kind of take it there to start off this whole genre of shit.
Yeah.
And that came out in like 1978.
Yeah, that's where we got our American slasher. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's one of those, this came out in 81. So it's like everyone was kind of starting to try to copy the other guy to do their own thing with the same formula. And some people did get away from it. They did try to do something different. But that's why I felt like, especially with this film, it's just people taking sort of how those films from the 50s and 60s were made and still transitioning it to this.
Yeah.
Because there's some films that you do get that feel from, and people, even like in The Unnameable, I think it was I'm thinking of, it's like everyone in there dresses and talks exactly like they're living in the 50s.
Yeah, they were trying really hard to channel Lovecraft, and they didn't quite make it. But
yeah, it didn't entirely translate. Still a good movie. Still had some.
No, it's still solid. The sequel's a little odd.
Yeah. Absolutely. But I mean, even The Uninvited also. That's another movie just kind of similar in tone as well.
Okay.
But I don't know. It's watching this made me think of a funny moment with my sister and my dad.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad Linda grew up to see the light of her mistakes later in life.
She did?
Because yes, because Linda, there's a director that Linda absolutely stone cold would slap in the face with a dead fish.
Yeah.
And I happened to love his movie, so I tried showing my sister and my dad Phantom of the Paradise.
By the time we
reached what would have technically have counted for the end of that first reel, that's when the story started getting good, because that's when Beef was starting to talk about, this guy said if I sing his songs, he's going to kill me. And that's when we had to stop to eat dinner.
Yeah, Beef's
and
awesome.
I remembered it because my dad was like, shit, that was actually starting to get good. I was falling asleep during that movie. He's like, nothing was getting me interested at all.
Yeah, there's a reason Brian De Palma's a thing. Yeah, believe it or not.
Yeah, because he likes to rip off Hitchcock.
If you, if you only watch Body Double and shit, you'd think like, Brian De Palma, fuck that.
But
guy,
I love The Untouchables and now, thanks to Donnie, Phantom of the Paradise.
I really love Blowout and The Fury. Most people don't even know The Fury exists, but it's fucking amazing. That movie's got everything.
But I don't know. It's trying to get away from 80s horror because, they do all follow a formula.
Yeah.
And it's either one or two different formulas they follow.
Yeah.
But a lot more modern films are trying to do the slow burn or a slow setup.
Yeah, a lot of modern everything is trying to be slow burn.
Yeah,
when it isn't appropriate.
The most you'll end up getting is just a few, like Linda said, jump scares, which aren't even scares. It's just loud fucking.
Yeah, you're just startled. Yeah, you're not gonna have a nightmare later.
Loud musical cues, like, oh my god, a cat took a shit.
Yeah,
it's like,
well, this is why we're in the era of fast zombies. Like people don't get it unless they have a visceral reaction.
You have no idea how visceral that is when a cat takes a shit and they go running out of the room.
Yes.
And like, what happened? Like, oh my God.
Mr. Khan does it all the time where it's like, why are you running, little? No!
Did I ever tell you about the time in the Walgreens where the girl in the tiny booty shorts comes out of the ladies' room and I had to clean it? And I'm like, what's that smell? And the door hadn't quite swung shut yet. And in the stall, there was a turd, and there wasn't even any toilet paper. She pulled the tiny booty shirts up her shit-slicked ass without even wiping. How are you even human if you do that? There's a place in hell for people like that.
But seriously, I'm stuck my office is set up by one of the cat's litter boxes, so I'm stuck working there.
I remember going to your place that time years ago, and your shit's all about the litter boxes. Good God, woman.
I've got three cats.
We'll squeeze them all out over
meow,
the toilet.
Motherfucker, meow.
Just squeeze them real good.
Of,
he'll come out.
Smelling cat shit and ammonia.
Yeah.
The other thing I actually thought was kind of, it's the only mildly amusing high point I'll give. Like, if you're like up here at like Citizen Kane and you're down here at the bottom with Hell Knight, you just kind of get a little heart murmur and it kind of goes up and then you're like, oh, okay, I'm better now. It was their treatment of, I want to say, classism in the film.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's the main thing I got
the Matthew Starr kid
from
was
the
a
director.
Rich kid. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like you had a lot of that going back and forth, not just like rich kid, poor kid, which was kind of I mean, as well as the film could be, between Linda's character and her man friend, which I did think was hilarious when they couldn't even share a bed and she wouldn't even try to. She just looks over her shoulder like, I know you're standing on my ass, but can you blow out the candle?
To your own bed? Yeah, yeah.
Well, yeah.
He asked,
don't jerk off, I'll hear it.
Don't tell me you're majoring in political science with a minor in terrorism. I thought, I think that's what Adrian and I ended up majoring in.
Amen.
Unintentionally. I'll go.
But
I mean, yeah, Reagan was in office. Nicely. You're going to address this stuff. Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, even like with the whole how you're supposed to appear to people and the whole don't judge a book by its cover type shit.
Yeah.
Because I actually, that was something I did give credit a little bit to this film with, even the guy who was the obvious nerd, he wasn't being actively called out for it.
Yeah.
Just he was overly horned up. Yeah. He still had a pretty nice date. He didn't get stuck with the girl that are like, let's just stick some glasses on you and call you an ugly bitch. It's like they actually tried to make it somewhat realistic.
I'm pretty sure that he had the, like, I'm speaking honestly now. I believe that he was supposed to have a hard on for what's his name? Peter, the president of the fraternity.
Peter. Yeah.
But because, and I think that's why the ladies bothered him, because where he was like, why didn't we just leave that twat behind?
Why like, are they bothering me with your lady things?
Yeah.
I think, honestly, he wanted to ride that pole. And now, knowing that, that, what's his name? DeSimone. Made a lot of gay porn, with actual
exclusively
stories.
Gay porn, I think.
I mean, actually. It sounds like it fits.
Yeah.
If we want to,
if the dick fits, you know
it'll fit.
Saying?
That's more a discussion I would love to have when we talk about eventually Fright Night, because oh mama,
oh buddy.
But,
okay.
I don't know. I thought that was really handled pretty well. But
okay. All right.
The last thing I have to bring up of the fabled Jesus of Roger Ebert.
Okay, let's hear about Mr. Ebert, please.
In his movie, he describes that this film to him is a lackluster example of the dead teenager movie formula. And this is why I want to go back to what you said earlier, because I do have to disagree with you a bit on this.
Okay, that's fair.
It's because this film very much meets these beats that we all know and love of the dead teenager films, which is, he says, a dead teenager movie formula in which kids gather together for a ritual, an event, or a gathering at a camp, a creepy house, etc. They tell a story about someone committing grisly murders years ago, and they always end it with, and the killer was never found and still walks these grounds, according to legend. The film very much does this in grandiose style and reveal, especially with the lock on the house. Even though they're setting it up for them to be there, it's just to sell the point of murderous shit happened here. Don't go near it. But they also at least avoided the Friday the 13th thing of you're all doomed.
Oh, I love that guy. I was so mad when they killed him off in the second one. He should have come back every movie. It's got a death curse. he should have been the killer in the fifth one. His corpse was killing people.
He's throwing his eye at people. But, I mean, do you feel that really kind of, that was the formula they were going for? They tried to step away from that.
No, that's still there. Although
this wasn't a cash grab, because you can tell kind of the difference with things like that. But even with quick productions, because even Sleepaway Camp, for God's sake, that was a pretty quick production.
Yeah,
it still took
another cheapie,
a couple weeks, but they still managed to kind of make their own thing win that. But that's a totally different formula than what we're talking about here.
Like a lot of the ones I referenced earlier, like a lot of the Friday the 13th knockoffs were things made as quick crash bags by people who hadn't necessarily done horror and didn't necessarily know what they were doing. And a lot of the ones I mentioned, that was for the worse. And I think, I honestly think that Tom DeSimone did bring a little bit of freshness of perspective here, being he is a guy who came from adult films. And so him doing mainstream filmmaking is a change of pace in general. And the bit about like the urban legend aspect of filmmaking, like so many of the late 70s, early 80s slashers tried to grab at that. It's like, oh, well, we made one called Halloween. Should we do one that's a holiday? No, we'll do that hook hand story about the severed head dripping on the car, you know?
Yeah.
And so like that was that because they knew where the money was at. It's like, well, what do teenagers do? Well, they tell each other scary stories, do drugs and have sex. Brilliant.
I mean, not wrong.
Which I mean, yeah. And
which wasn't me as a teenager because I'm not like other girls.
You're a mechanic.
Don't worry, Adrian. You've got to be somebody's baby. But I don't know. It the movie did stick with that formula to me. It's just, even if it tried doing it somewhat originally, it just did it at its own pace, I'll say. Because it wasn't until later on. It's like, first, yeah, they talk about the murders and shit that happened there, but then later on they go into the whole, okay, this is how he killed his family and how he left the one son alive, and it's because reasons, he just decided not to kill him, but he
killed
himself. Or just
sucks at killing people.
Yeah, he's like, oh, fuck, I forgot I had another one of you. Oh, well, YOLO.
It's like the movie Freeway. It's like, she thought she killed Kiefer Sutherland really good, but she sucks. She sucks at killing people. She's just not good at anything.
Yeah.
Nobody's
just,
good at killing
the original, the original Friday the 13th. It's like, but what about the boy in the lake? It's like, there was nobody in the lake.
Then he's still there.
Bitch got killed in the second movie with a screwdriver. Nobody
got to feed her kitty. She got screwed.
No, I was gonna if I made my Dawn of the Hell, it would have the frickin' same opening as Friday the 13th Part 2. Yeah, Linda Blair would hear a suspicious noise. She'd be like, "Kitty, oh kitty, oh is there a severed head in the fridge, kitty? Oh, I get stabbed in the brain."
And that's something I will forever to my grave give thanks and praise to Friday the 13th is having continuity all the way up until Part 6.
Yeah.
Then after that, they just said, fuck it, we're done.
Well, it's the same thing the Halloween movies did, by the way. It's like, oh, it's a druid curse now. And and fuck it. Those didn't happen. Erase. We already released those. No, it never happened. This is the definitive version. Director's
cut.
When do
we get to talk about Jason X or Jason Goes to Manhattan?
Wait, I already told you.
I'm going to bring in all the Leprechaun films.
Don't
so
put
get
those
ready
in
to
the
talk
same
more
sentence.
About those.
Jason Takes Manhattan is so much better than Jason X. Come on. It's got
soundtrack. That's
right
not
Metropolis,
hard
you know?
To beat.
The darkest side of the night.
But your thoughts on that, Linda?
On what?
On the Formula Malone.
On Hell Night.
Oh, well, I think I basically said my piece.
She fucking didn't appreciate it.
Yeah. I'd like it being more story driven, and
yeah.
I mean that I think that's my problem with it. There was nothing to the story, and for me, I didn't find it aesthetically pleasing. And I feel like there was nothing in it for me. There was just nothing there. There's no substance.
I think I can help you with that.
The kids and your substance.
Because since we've had to watch this a few times for reasons.
You actually rewatched this?
Yes.
That's rare for you.
And I had to have something on to keep my interest in it. So I had turned on, since you mentioned it before already, Mystery Science Theater. And the episode that came on, it was like a spark went off in my head because I found what could save this film. If you take out what you would call the soundtrack to this film... and you put in the Manos, the Hands of Fate soundtrack, it would make this movie infinitely better.
The penis is evil.
The master doesn't want you here. He wants you, but he can't have you.
See, maybe some sort of Benny
someone
Hill.
Walk across screen for 5 minutes. With
no, I think Benny Hill would have been better.
We know that everything goes better with yakety sax. You put yakety sax on for 3.5 hours to Godfather Part 2, it's still better.
You could put it on while taking a dump, and I guarantee it'll work out so much faster than taking 20 minutes.
No.
How much shit do you have to wipe off your ass?
When I take a shit, it's all the Magnum PI theme. Because at first you got the hard work, you know, bam, 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 ba, da, ba, da, ba, da. But then once it's smooth sailing, da 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 do 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 do, bam, bam, bam. You're going downhill for that second half.
I feel like this is the end of the episode.
Yeah. As a last note to this film, the ending climax to this piece of shit, just taking off in the car. And then slamming it and going, oh, God, he's on the roof. What else can I do? I took this time to lock the gate behind me for reasons.
For reasons.
To hold the horror inside.
Ram into that bitch.
Well, I mean, you know, that was another thing. I mean, obviously she didn't know because she wasn't there, but we saw one of the Gorks like running outside of the gate.
Yes.
So obviously the locks don't work.
She didn't know.
It would have made I would have laughed if they do a remake of this and she locks the gate, but then realizes that the keys to the car were on the other side of the gate. So she has to unlock the gate, get the keys, and then lock the gate again.
Oh, yeah, I need these.
Yeah, yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
And then the Gork is in the back seat of the car like, I had time.
Well, almost every cult horror movie ever made is getting a remake. So we'll just sit back. It'll happen. But speaking of tits, Donnie, you're going to have a tits star movie, right?
I am.
The power of tit star.
Yeah.
You will. You will have it. You will.
I absolutely will.
You will have it.
Now is the time to say, please listen, follow, rate, and review Videorama on Apple Podcasts, especially because it helps us immensely.
We're going to watch Maniac.
God damn it.
No fucking way. Nuh-uh. Nuh-uh.
If you do review us, it will earn you an on-air shout out. And also check out our show on YouTube if you're not already doing it and seeing our lovely faces.
Do it. Do it now. this is what we look like. Blame God.
Also check out our Patreon if you would like to support us, and you should. On our Patreon, you can get awesome
like
stickers, buttons, Adrian sketches. You can also get the access to the bonus episodes. You can get episodes early.
You can get herpes.
You can get herpes. What? What?
Space herpes.
Space herpes. But also, if you are giving enough, then you can also make your suggestions for a theme or a movie, and we will cover it. Hell, if you give enough, you can even be a guest on the show. So, I mean, how awesome is that?
But also, Diverse-a-wreck.
We will also give you a shout out on air, on social medias, all depending on how much you love us.
And you love us very much indeed.
Check that out at patreon.com/videoramapod. That's VideoRamaPod. Remember, you can find Videorama on Twitter. You could visit our website soon, hopefully.
I'm
going to
visit the shit out of it.
And you can write to us at videoramapod@gmail.com. If you can visit our Twitter account on VideoramaP, that's the letter P for pod, you could take part in our poll to vote on who presented the best movie in this theme this month, and you get to decide who will be our employee of the month. So with that, check out my other podcast about witches in history and stories of Almija, Bed Knobs, and Broom Flicks. That's BROOMFLICKS. You know we're enjoyable because we got the licks at the end. Also, check me out as Lila in Dispatches of Disassociation and as Patrice and Lieutenant Murphy in Coyote's Bluff. That was a fucking joy to play. That was a lot of fun. Adrian, where can the people find you?
You can find me on the deviantart.com, where I have my 3,000 plus artworks and stories and chapters and various things and comic type shits. And on there, you could check out The Dreadful Tales, which is our pulp magazine, which we present on there as a journal every other month. And there's lots of great stories in there by friends of mine and folks that I respect. And you should just go to DA and read stuff. Not enough people use that as a resource for literature, but there's a lot of great authors on DeviantArt. Languishing in Obscurity, it's not just about sonic porn and tits on there and cam whores. There's also stories. And not all of those are porn either. Go on there and find out which ones are which.
You should definitely check it out. I'm a supporter, and you can too.
Furry porn, won't you?
Donnie, what about you?
I can do that myself. I can this thing.
Can you? You can?
I can too, I say to you people. I am the Unreal Goals on Twitter. I am Stilgar the Twi'lek on Insta of Graham.
Nerd!
I am Unreal Goals over on the U of Two.
You got your show on there.
Yes, I have Wisdom in a Bottle, as well as working on my writing audio drama project, which also, I guess, why not throw out old shit as well? Ooh. Mr. Cinema Recall was nice enough to grant me the lead role in his show I did with my sister as well of Night of Living Dead, an audio drama. You should check it out. It's really pretty awesome. There's a lot of talented people in that.
The Cellar!
I also was on the Coyote's Muff Bluff show, and that was a wonderful,
you were Lieutenant Murphy
as well. Yes, I was Lieutenant Murphy and Delilah.
But I hate you.
Other than that, you'll find me with a lot of raccoons in your trash bins behind your local Arby's, and stop throwing your needles in there. They really hurt.
Sharps containers, people. They're called
Sharps
containers.
Thank you for reminding me. I would like to share our love as a group.
Good night, people.
For the Vern.
Thank you, the Vern. Recall. You're real classy. Yeah.
You are awesome. You're
classy
amazing.
Guy.
We love you.
He has a large laser disc collection, just like I do.
He does.
You can see him go through the whole thing. Yeah.
And he made Donnie made an awesome trailer for us, and he made it epic. It was pretty amazing.
He added music.
and he's a supporter, so you could be cool like the Vern.
Is he a witness like the Linda?
He gets the stickers.
I don't think so.
Because he gets the job done.
He's sticking to it.
He does get the job done.
Very nice job, by the way, on your re-edit of the music into that. That was very awesome.
So next week we get to hear Donnie's recommendation. I wonder what it will be.
I fucking told you already.
I told you not to go out tonight.
What is she doing around here?
Joe Spinell died for our sins.
What a little twat. Why didn't we leave her behind?
Her behind. Let's the only good thing. She's on out of here.
God damn it.